Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Our guest today is Maria LaHood. Maria is a senior staff attorney for the Center for Constitutional Rights, which she joined in 2004. She specializes in international human rights litigation, and she seeks to hold governments and government officials and corporations accountable for extrajudicial killings, torture, and war crimes abroad. Maria, welcome to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Thanks, Cindy, for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you on, especially this is such a timely subject that we're going to be talking about today. In April, President Obama ordered an extrajudicial killing of an American citizen, Anwar al-Awlaki, for his alleged part in the Fort Hood shootings and the underwear bomber. And if these charges are true, they're pretty serious. But how does the Obama regime justify this assassination without a trial or due process?
Well, we've learned, it first came out in January. It was reported that Anwar al-Awlaki had been put on the CIA's kill list, on the list by JSOC, which is the Joint Special Operations Command, which is a covert unit of the U.S. military. And then later it came out that he was the first U.S. citizen ever to be added to the CIA's kill list. Those were all, reported unofficially by government officials. But in the case that we've brought to try to stop the Obama administration from killing a U.S. citizen outside of armed conflict without due process, unless they pose an imminent threat and killing them is a last resort, the government has basically said that they are authorized to kill al-Awlaki because he is an operational leader of ACAP. The only thing that they've said he was actually involved in was the December attempted bombing. But they claim the right to decide, if a U.S. citizen can be killed without any charge, without any trial. And unbelievably, the U.S. District Court has agreed with the Obama administration and said it's up to the administration and that the courts have no role here.
Are you talking about the decision a couple days ago from
yes,
the federal
this
court?
Monday, the district court judge issued his decision on the case that we brought and first found that because we represent Anwar al-Awlaki's father, that he doesn't have standing to bring the suit on behalf of his son, claiming that even though the son is in hiding in Yemen because of fear of being killed by the U.S. government, that he could go to the U.S. embassy or he could email lawyers or he could somehow access the courts. So his father can't bring the case on his behalf. And then also finding that the judiciary, the court system in the United States, has no role in determining whether the Obama administration can kill a U.S. citizen without due process outside of armed conflict. So that there is no complaint to be made here.
That's amazing to me, mm-hmm. that a court would rule that it has no say in a judicial process, that they're giving the say-so to the President of the United States, mm-hmm. and without a review even of the evidence.
Right. Well, without a review even. And we hadn't even asked for a review of the evidence at this stage. We had asked for the legal standards that the U.S. government is using. So U.S. citizens should know what kind of conduct would subject them to killing by our own government. And that, we said that the court has a role in dictating what that standard is and looking at the law and saying, when people could be killed outside of war and with no due process. And the court refused to do that.
This is these are frightening developments, I think, here in the United States. I was watching Russia TV, I think it's called Russia TV, when in April, when it was announced that Obama was going to do this, and they asked five people if they thought it was okay, and four out of those five people said, yes, if the president says it's okay to assassinate an American citizen, then it must be okay. So it's not only frightening, these developments, but it's also frightening the lack of any kind of moral outrage against it in the United States. Like I said, whether Awlaki is guilty or not right now isn't the issue. The issue is these extrajudicial assassinations.
Yeah. No, absolutely. We've said all along that if there is evidence against him of any crime, he should be charged and he should be captured and he should be tried. The fact is he hasn't been publicly charged, and nobody knows. And instead of, you know, affording him that due process, again, the administration has just decided to kill a suspect. And we know there's a huge difference between allegations and evidence. And you know, we look at other examples in the war on terror of people who the government has said are terrorists or the worst of the worst, and they've ended up being innocent. And who knows? You know, it's you need due process. You need the court system to actually figure that out. And if you kill someone, then it's too late to figure out.
What do you think is the motivation really behind this? Because it doesn't seem like, you know, the accusations are enough to warrant this. You know, extrajudicial execution. And I had Glenn Greenwald on right after this was announced, and he basically said that, you know, that Awlaki has never crossed the line of protected speech.
Yeah, I can't say what the motivation is. I know that, you know, under the Obama administration, targeted drone attacks have tripled in Pakistan, for example.
Right.
And, you know, these extrajudicial killings, these, you know, they're called so-called targeted killings, have also killed, you know, numerous civilians, not, you know, and not just people who everyone would acknowledge are civilians and who were not the intended targets of the missiles or the drones, or whatever way they're killed. And the estimates vary because it's so hard to tell because everything's shrouded in secrecy. But it's estimated that between 1 and 50 civilians are killed anytime someone is targeted. And, for example, in Yemen last year, there was a strike that was at least assisted by JSOC, by the U.S. military, and it killed 41 civilians, mostly children and women. So, you know, regardless of the motivation, what it's serving to do is, inflame hostility toward the United States. And instead of doing things like promoting justice and the rule of law, we're actually, you know, causing more hatred and more killing.
Well, as a matter of fact, the Times Square bomber, the so-called Times Square bomber who was swiftly tried and found guilty, said that one of his premier motivations for doing that was these targeted drone attacks in Pakistan and Yemen.
Right.
And then we had the case recently of Afia Siddiqui, was not a citizen of the United States, and she was captured and brought to the United States and had a trial. Admittedly, it was basically a kangaroo court, but, you know, what is, have you had any answers about why that's not an option for Awlaki?
I don't know. You know, and Yemen has said before that it's taking measures to arrest him for possible trial, and he actually just, as of a month ago, I think, he was actually charged with a crime in Yemen, and it was related to someone had killed a French citizen, and that person was you know, detained in solitary for, I think, over a month, and he was tortured and said he had had some communications with Anwar al-Awlaki, but then when he was actually finally brought to court, you know, he said, no, I was tortured. I didn't
right.
actually have communications with al-Awlaki. I killed this man because of personal reasons. But that's the reason, actually, that al-Awlaki is being charged in Yemeni court. But, you know, Yemen has said it's taking actions to arrest him. So, you know, it seems like if the United States government can find Anwar al-Awlaki to kill him, then they can certainly find him to bring him to justice for whatever crimes they may claim he's committed.
Well, that was one of the things I was wondering about in one of my former questions, was that if the evidence against him is mostly based on torture, then the government would know that they would have a pretty thin case against him.
Well, that's for a different incident. So, yeah, I don't, you know, the government hasn't said what evidence it has against him. It has only, you know, it's certainly mentioned his preaching and the things he's said, some of which have been, you know, hateful. But it has, as far as incidents, it's claimed he was in email communication with the Fort Hood shooter, but the only thing that they've actually claimed that he's been, you know, assisting on was the Detroit airplane case. So who knows, again, because they don't have to actually charge him and they don't have to come out with evidence against him. They can basically just, you know, according to the Monday's decision, do whatever they're going to do without judicial review. And, you know, the judge tried to sort of limit it and say, well, this doesn't mean that the U.S. government can kill any U.S. citizen anywhere, but, you know, essentially, and he tried to restrict it to, well, here we have a U.S. citizen in hiding abroad who the Director of National Intelligence has said is an operational member of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, but, you know, the government can say anyone is a terrorist, and
right.
they have said lots of people are terrorists who are not terrorists, and many of us go abroad, frankly. So it is extremely frightening and gives the executive, you know, powers that it shouldn't have and takes away, you know, the court really here has abdicated its role in determining the law and in being a check on the executive, which is what our Constitution is about.
What's the next step? Are you taking the case to a higher court?
Well, we have to discuss that with our client and with each other. It's hard to imagine letting this decision stand, as awful as it is, but we have not made that decision yet.
You've been involved in several cases around, you know, Islamic, your clients and against the U.S. government. Would you care to talk about any of those cases and the implications?
Well, you know, another case I had was on behalf of Meher Arar, who is a Canadian citizen who was born in Syria. And again, he was someone who the government said was unequivocally a member of al-Qaeda. And, you know, he's been totally exonerated. The Canadian government has found he's never been involved in any terrorism or linked to any terrorism or in any offense whatsoever. He was he's an engineer, and he was coming back through New York on his way home to Canada, and he was, you know, snatched by the government, by the U.S. officials, wasn't allowed to make a phone call for 5 days. His family had no idea where he was. He was detained for 2 weeks here. Finally, the U.S. officials put him on a jet plane, and they said to him, you've been determined to be a member of al-Qaeda based on classified evidence that you can't see or defend. And they sent him to Syria, where he was tortured for a year. He was held in a grave-like 3-foot wide by 6-foot-long cell for over 10 months, without daylight, without anything. And, you know, he finally got out due to the efforts of his wife and the Canadian government. And the Canadian government, you know, apologized for its role in giving the U.S. government false information about him. and paid him $10 million compensation, and yet our government keeps him on the watch list, you know, refuses to apologize. And then when we brought suit against the U.S. officials responsible, the U.S. government claimed for national security reasons that the suit couldn't be litigated. And that's what happened. The case was dismissed. And even, you know, we took it to the Supreme Court, and in the Supreme Court, the Obama administration came in defending, you know, Bush administration officials and saying, this case shouldn't be heard. And it wasn't heard. And, you know, now Maher Arar is left without justice in the United States. And that's just one example of the many examples of where, you know, people were wronged by our government, and our government, a new administration, has failed to take responsibility for that, and no one has been held accountable. You know, just like all the instances of torture by our government where no one has been held accountable and not one survivor has been given redress by our government, and it is just shameful. And now we're, you know, now besides arbitrary detention and torture, we're also turning to just killing people wherever we find them, and it's scary.
Well, I went to Cuba with one of your colleagues at the Center for Constitutional Rights, and we went with one of the members of from the movie The Road to Guantanamo, one mm-hmm. of the British citizens, a thief, I think his name was. And we went there, and he and two of his, friends were captured somewhere ambiguously in Afghanistan or maybe Pakistan, and they were taken to Guantanamo, held there, and tortured for 2 years when the British government had proof that they weren't even at the place that they were accused of. They were accused of mm-hmm. being at a rally that Osama bin Laden gave. And
right.
they, you know, it was proven that they weren't even there. So they were tortured, and now they can't even come to the United States, even though the evidence totally exonerated them.
Right. And, you know, all the Brit, or 16 of the British citizens who were held at Guantanamo have now been, are being compensated by the British government for its complicity. Yet none of them have been able to get, you know, any compensation from the U.S. government, much less an apology, much less, you know, freedom to fly where they want. And if you look at the, you know, at the detainees, you know, the ones who have been able to bring their habeas cases to court to actually see the evidence against them, most of them, the court has said, there isn't sufficient evidence to detain them, even though, again, the government has all along said, you know, they were part of Al-Qaeda, they were, you know, and it just goes to show that you cannot trust our government, and that there is a reason we have due process, and there's a reason you need to actually, you know, make a case against someone before punishing them, and even more so when, you know, when you're killing someone. Not that anyone should be killed, but...
Obama came in to, well, he campaigned on a promise of transparency to to kind of expose or not go down the same path that the Bush administration went down. But as far as my research has proven, and I think you said it right here on the program, is that the Bush administration never even approved a targeted assassination of an American. Do you know of anyone else that's on Obama's hit list?
We don't know of anyone else on the list, and it is secret. You know, the only reason we knew about Anwar al-Awlaki is because government officials had come out and said it. So again, you know, the secrecy prevents you from actually doing anything to stop it. And on this one occasion where we actually know a person who's on the list and a U.S. citizen nonetheless, we, you know, the court finds, well, you still can't sue over it because, you know, his father isn't enough. You need him, where that's, you know, we've supplied evidence that he would be endangered if he tried to bring a case. We would be endangered if we tried to contact him or if anyone tried to contact him by going there. So there is no case that can be brought, apparently. Not that, you know, not that we won't try, but from the court's decision, you know, this whole practice can't be challenged, essentially.
Well, you guys do great work there at the CCR, and one of my favorite quotes is from James Stewart, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and he says the only cause worth fighting for is a lost cause.
Oh, well, that's good to remember.
Does it seem like that's your life?
Yes, unfortunately it does.
And you guys, like I said, you do wonderful work, but when I introduced you, I talked about a little bit about you're trying to hold corporations accountable too, and you've gone after like huge corporations like Caterpillar and Royal Dutch Shell. How how has that affected your life, going after these mega corporations?
Well, you know, that's also difficult. Not quite as difficult as going after the U.S. government, but it's interesting because in the case against Caterpillar, the reason we lost was because of the U.S. government. You know, we sued Caterpillar for supplying D9 bulldozers to Israel, knowing that they would be used for unlawful home demolitions. And we represented Rachel Corrie's parents and four Palestinian families who were killed or injured when their homes were demolished on top of them. And the U.S. government came in at the appellate stage and said Caterpillar can't be held liable because we reimburse Israel or Caterpillar for those D9 bulldozers. And it would be interfering with U.S. foreign policy if Caterpillar was held liable for the sales. So the court accepted that, and the court dismissed the case against Caterpillar because it might interfere with U.S. foreign policy of reimbursing, you know, the sales of the bulldozers. So, again, the U.S. government, you know, coming in against justice on that case. The Royal Dutch Shell case that we brought on behalf of Ogoni in Nigeria was for Shell's complicity in the detention, torture, and killing of activists who had opposed Shell's operations and the environmental degradation and their human rights abuses. And the Nigerian government killed or detained or tortured them with Shell's complicity. And that case, we were headed for trial last year, and it ended up settling. So, you know, there was some compensation to the plaintiffs, and a $5 million trust fund was established for to benefit the people of Ogoni. So that, you know, that case was more successful than our other ones. But it's still, you know, unfortunately, recently in the Second Circuit, in the companion case to that case, it's called Kiobel versus Royal Dutch Shell, the Second Circuit decided that corporations cannot be held liable for international law violations like torture and extrajudicial killings. So, you know, we settled, you know, a year and a half ago, and now in the same circuit, corporations can't even be held liable. So that case is, you know, has the plaintiffs have requested rehearing, so we'll see if the law stands. But, you know, I don't know if corporate liability for international law violations will be possible or not, at least in New York.
We just have a few more minutes. Can you talk a little bit about what I find interesting in the whole WikiLeaks thing and, you know, Julian Assange is basically being targeted by the U.S. government, and he's not a U.S. citizen, is that, you know, there's all kinds of outrage, and it's rightful outrage, of course, against what the U.S. government and other governments of the world are doing to persecute Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. But then I don't see even approaching a smattering of concern for, you know, this call for the assassination of Anwar al-Awlaki. Do you have any comments about the Julian Assange and the whole WikiLeaks mess or brouhaha that's going on?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because one of the things that has come out through the leaks is actually how the president of Yemen, Mr. Saleh, said that he would cover for the U.S. government, basically, and claim that the bombs that were attacking people were Yemeni, or that the attacks were Yemeni instead of from the U.S. government. So it's interesting. I mean, I think there's something really on every topic that interests people that's come out through the cables. And you know, I guess why are people so outraged? I mean, it's also interesting looking at how quickly people have been to call. I mean, you know, as crazy as it is to call for the killing of Assange, you know,
right.
and calling him a terrorist, and you know, it's this mania and hysteria that's really frightening. That you can just, you know, throw around words like terrorist, and people just say, kill him," you know. It's I mean, it harks back to really barbaric times, and it's extremely frightening. And people aren't, you know, and you think, yeah, the focus should be on transparency. The focus should be on, you know, what the cables are revealing about what our government is doing and what we're responsible for. And instead, people are you know, blaming the messenger here. It will be interesting to see what happens with that. But I think it's our job to continuously make sure that the focus, that people are focused on what's actually important here. And I think what's important is what we are responsible for, what our government is doing, you know, the abuses we're committing, our responsibility for those, and the WikiLeaks, you know, cables are just exposing more of that and give us more of an opportunity to set things right. And, you know, it's the same thing, I think, with things like, you know, targeted killing. What we need to do as citizens is tell our government that, you know, that this cannot happen in our name, that the executive does not have the right to just kill U.S. citizens, you know, outside of the Constitution, contrary to international law, and actually hold it accountable.
What can my listeners do to learn more about your work and to support the work of the Center
for Constitutional Rights? They can go to our website, which is ccrjustice.org. They can sign up for action alerts. They can, you know, if they want, make donations and support our work. And there are many opportunities. You can look at our various cases and, you know, different opportunities in each one to advocate on behalf of the issues. And that would be great. The website, again, is ccrjustice.org.
Well, Maria LaHood, thank you for your work, and thank you for being on the soapbox. I know you don't feel that great, and I hope you feel better soon.
Sorry, I don't sound that great. Thanks for having me, Cindy.
That was our guest, Maria LaHood. I hope you enjoyed it. Well, you've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm Cindy Sheehan. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my producer, Mikey, my webmaster, Rich Bowser. Special thanks to you for listening, and my guest, Maria.
I must make my witness. Have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. Dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Are running wild in the street. There's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes. As if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
They're yelling in Baton Rouge.